It is time for the season finale of the College Try podcast. I am your host, Austin Price. I was so hyped. The national title game was on Monday night, January 20th. And I was like, you know what? On Tuesday night, January 21st, I'm going to be just ready to go, raring to go. I'm going to have my script ready. It's going to be awesome. And then Milton, Pensacola, the surrounding areas, actually a lot of Florida, got hit with an unprecedented amount of snow. I think my house got like 7 inches. So I've been out of the office for the past couple days. The season finale got delayed by essentially a day and a half. It's about noon here on this Thursday, January 23rd. But you know what? That just adds to the suspense. I'm glad to be back. Glad to be doing this one final ride. Thank you very much for tuning in. You can find this episode and all previous episodes of the College Try podcast on our podcast page at ESPNPensacola.com. There you can also find installments of War Eagle Weekly, The Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass. You can also listen to ESPN Pensacola live on 99.1 FM, 1330 AM, or on your ESPN Pensacola mobile app. Without further ado, let us get into this. Let's rip off this Band-Aid one final time, huh? All right. Final episode has three parts. Going to keep it simple. Going to lay it out for you. First up, of course, is the national championship game. To what should be no surprise, the Ohio State Buckeyes are your 2025 CFP national champs. And they took the title by a convincing margin, 34-23. It's weird, though, because I actually did see a fair amount of folks taking the Irish in this one. I don't know if it was just wishful thinking, hoping for an upset, but it just wasn't meant to be. As I've said throughout this entire playoff, the Buckeyes have simply been on another level against everyone they have faced. And I don't stress that as some I told you so moment, trying to come off as some sports guru or whatever. The mismatch was just that blatant every time. I respect Notre Dame. I made that clear last week. I respect Notre Dame for not just making it to this opportunity, but also refusing to quit when down as much as 24 points in the second half. They, you know, and when they weren't able to find a rhythm, when they kept making mistakes, they kept with it. And as a result, they were actually able to make a decent game out of this at one point. They took an early lead, I believe, and then Ohio State just took complete control. If memory serves me, what? It was 7-0 Notre Dame, and that turned into 31-7 Ohio State. But then we had Notre Dame making it 31-23, and it's like, okay, it's far-fetched, but at least we got ourselves a competitive game here. So I gave Notre Dame credit last Tuesday. Gave Marcus Freeman a lot of credit. He's made a believer out of me. You did well. I think against this Buckeyes team, with how unbelievable they were in the playoffs, I think you did well. With the Buckeyes going on to win by double digits anyway, it's just undeniable that they earned this notch in their belt. And you can't take it away from them. Or at least you shouldn't try to. Oh, but there is still such a thing as an idiot, right? Silly me, I keep forgetting. Idiots do exist. I don't know why we just can't look at this and say, listen, Marcus Freeman's Irish put up a good fight. Steve Sarkisian's Longhorns put up a good fight. But Ohio State was visibly better. They blew out Tennessee. They blew out Oregon. They were the best team when it mattered. They had their dips in the regular season. Most teams, if not all teams, did. It's whatever. I don't know why you just can't look at such a dominating tear and say, you know what? Ohio State was just better. And leave it at that. But as I said, these buffoons come in, and it's just infuriating. If you haven't seen some of the dialogue amongst college football fans after Monday night's outcome, get this. There are actually some people getting in social media comment wars trying to argue that OSU didn't deserve much, if any, praise for this feat. And the reason why? Because they spent a lot of money on their roster. Yes, in a world where there have been all kinds of NCAA violating scandals, in an era where schools of all kinds are allowed to pay players willy-nilly, people are losing their minds over Ohio State leaning into the NIL craze. I know some of these people, you know, they're just trolls, right? They always are. But it's too much of an active discussion for it to all just be some playful banter. There is genuinely a pool of people out there that feel this title is less than because Ohio State paid players, despite participating in a player-paying landscape. And that's really the main counter-argument to this whole wine fest. Other big-name schools forked out bucks for some of their talent, and they likely could have done so even more had they wished to. But because OSU was better than all of them when it came to putting the checkbooks away and actually playing on the field, they're some lame fakers? Yeah, sure. Man, I honestly think we're just to a point now where some bozos out there will go out of their way to slap an asterisk next to any result they didn't want. OSU's a blue blood. Head coach Ryan Day is a pretty polarizing guy. People don't want to see those folks win. They don't. So when they do, when they win anyway, these haters like to live in some make-believe land where it never actually happened. It never counted. It was a sham. The same thing happened last year with Michigan. Michigan's a blue blood. They had a scandal. They paid a price for it and won anyway, but people didn't like that, so it doesn't count. An NBA team can't win a finals anymore without half of the community saying it didn't count because someone in the conference semis had a bench warmer hurt. It's just infuriating. We're already seeing groundwork being laid for this year's Super Bowl outrage if the Chiefs win again. Get ready to hear all the more about refs and how the entire league is rigged from head to toe. Goodness gracious, you didn't get the winner you wanted. Get over it. These were good teams, hard-fighting teams, good coaches. But a lot of them paid some money for players, too. Oh, but we're just going to talk about Ohio State and how much they paid. Because, you know, they won the whole thing. They bought the talent and they actually won with it. And we don't like that. We'd prefer you be like Texas A&M. Get the greatest recruiting class ever and still stink. God, give me a break. All right, that's the first thing I wanted to address. But before we get into the second, I want to remind you, you're listening to the College Try Podcast with Austin Price, yours truly, season finale. That's what we're in the middle of here. After this episode, it's kaput, at least until August. And I do want to, and I'm going to do this throughout the episode, but I do want to thank you again for coming along with me on this journey, so to speak, because we still got a lot more to talk about here. And this is really the meat of our final episode. It's the second thing I want to do before we part. And that is what every college football diehard likes to do when the season ends. Look ahead to next season. A comparison I've given before, not on this show, but it's one that I've nonetheless given before, is I like to treat the next college football season the way Santa's workshop treats Christmas in the movie Elf. If you've ever seen Elf, at the beginning, Santa's like, well, we had another successful year. The elves cheer. And then he's like, now it's time to start working towards next year's Christmas. And all the elves get happy and go right back to work. That's how I am with the season, man. The minute the season ends, I'm like, let's look ahead to what else we got. What's coming next? So that's what we're going to do here. That means it's time for my way too early top 12 to watch for this upcoming college football season. These are teams I feel have the pieces and the means to, that's essentially the same thing, to potentially find themselves floating around in the playoff conversation this upcoming year. But before we get into this, I do want to give a disclaimer. Obviously, a lot can and will change between now and August. So none of what you hear from this point onward is meant to be interpreted as some ironclad declaration that I'm willing to fall on my sword over. In all transparency, it's more or less just a handful of teams that have a relatively promising combination of 2024 performance and 2025 opposition. Oh, and also, I wrote this list in no particular order. I was just slapping these teams on here as soon as they came to me. So don't waste your energy getting hung up on who's mentioned before whom. All right? Now, with all that out of the way, let's get started. Number one, this one should come as no surprise. Ohio State. As defending champs, you're already looking like you're going to be one of the top teams to beat in 2025 by a wide margin. And you get to host Texas, Minnesota, and Penn State. Those are some of your toughest games. Outside of a trap game at Illinois and an iconic rivalry game at Michigan, neither of which you should lose for obvious reasons, this seems like the groundwork for a beautiful CFP resume. At least right now. Some of your toughest games at home and only trap games on the road. Games that you have the personnel to win. It's just a matter of whether you get in your own way. Ohio State is looking like the team to beat, and making it back to the playoffs seems like a challenge that only they could ruin. No one else. Then we've got the Longhorns, just mentioned them. They reloaded at QB with Arch Manning, and they go to OSU in Georgia, which is pretty brutal. But outside of that, their toughest game's at Florida. And that's a team we recently saw Texas decimate from top to bottom. And listen, Gator fans, I don't care about Lagway missing that game. The Gators were visibly so far out of their element, I firmly believe he would not have changed the outcome. But anyway, back to the matter at hand. If you go 10-2 with only quality road losses as an SEC team, that'll get you a healthy 8 or 9 seed easy. If Texas goes 10-2 and their only losses are Ohio State and Georgia, once again, I believe both of those games are on the road, you're going to be just fine. Number three, mentioned this team just now, Georgia. Their out-of-conference slate is terrible. Easily the toughest game is at Georgia Tech. That's a team that barely went positive. Also, the two teams that beat you this regular season, Bama and Ole Miss, they now come to you. You even get to host Texas after just beating them twice away from home. And while Neyland can be tough because you got to go to Tennessee, you've proven that you have a consistent ability to humble them. So simply having to visit them this time around shouldn't be some death sentence. And quite frankly, it almost never should be for a team of your usual caliber. So Georgia has got some tough teams at home. Toughest road game is Tennessee. They take care of Tennessee yearly. And that out-of-conference slate is hideous. Fourth, I've got Oregon. Simply put, their schedule is just manageable enough for them to post a strong record while being just formidable enough for them to still get love for it. Let me explain what I mean. They play a Big 12 team and rival, and they're out-of-conference. But that's OK State and Oregon State. Oklahoma State, I think, went 3-9. Oregon State went like 5-7. These teams combined for 8 wins. Neither went bowling. So you're playing bigger name competition, but it's bigger name competition that you should completely roll over. In league play, you avoid Ohio State. That's huge. You got to go to Penn State. That's not ideal. But you then get a bye before hosting Indiana. You also have to go to Iowa, but you get a bye before that. And then Minnesota, they're scrappy this year. They won 8 games. You hosting them should shape up to be an attractive win for you as well. So let's say you lose in Happy Valley. If you beat the rest of those guys, you're all set. If you lose at Penn State, who was a Final Four team this year, knocking on the door of the national title game, and you show up for some of those bigger games against Indiana, at Iowa, you're going to have bye weeks to prepare for them. Those are beautifully placed byes. You can have a quality loss and some decent wins. As a Big Ten team, welcome back to the playoff. Fifth up, I have Ole Miss. This is crazy. Ole Miss, easily, it is not close. They easily have the weakest schedule in the SEC. Their weak non-conference are 4 home games against teams that play smaller competition. If I'm not mistaken, Ole Miss's biggest home game is, biggest out-of-conference game is at home against Washington State. I believe that's as big as it gets. Washington State is in shambles as a program right now. The transfer portal's picked them apart. They've got a new head coach, new coaching staff. Washington State is completely uncertain, and I think them going to Oxford is about as tough as Ole Miss's out-of-conference schedule gets. So, I mean, it totally weak. And it makes up, get this, your 4 out-of-conference games make up just half of 8 home games that you have throughout the regular season. But who are your 4 road games, you may be asking? You got to go to Kentucky. You got to go to Georgia. That's tough. You got to go to Oklahoma. And you got to go to Mississippi State. Now, let's go through those again. Let's see if you see what I see. You have to go to 4-8 Kentucky. I don't care that you lost to them this year. That's a weak team. You have to go to Georgia. That's tough. But you just beat them by 3 scores. You have to go to OU. You beat them this season. They finished 6-7 on the year, losing record. And you have to go to Mississippi State. You convincingly beat them. They are coming off of a 2-10 season. That program's in shambles. And you have them off a bye. That is unreal. People picked apart Texas's SEC slate and how they need to play a real conference schedule. My goodness. Ole Miss has it as easy as it gets. You got a couple toughy games in there, but come on, you'll live. Yeah, I mean, you could have just a good season, and you will be floating around the top 15 like you were this year, floating around in the top 15. Oh, but it's just different in the SEC, right, Lane? I'll never get over that. Gosh, what an idiot. Lane Kiffin, he has become my arch nemesis over the course of this season. Lane, he is so petty, talking about how tough the SEC is all the time. You have as easy of a schedule and as ideal of circumstances as an SEC team could have. It's looking like you're going to lose Jackson Dart, and I still have you being in the playoff discussion potentially. That's how easy your SEC slate is. Don't even get me started on your out of conference. Pathetic. All right. Number six. This should be no surprise. Honestly, the only thing that should be surprising about this sixth pick is that it took me this long to put him on here. Notre Dame. I said I've become a believer in Marcus Freeman. I think I said that earlier in this episode, but I've said it the last week or two as well, and I meant it. They still have one opponent that's yet to be officially scheduled, I believe, but it's probably not going to be any worse than what's already your toughest game, and that's at Miami. But Miami's the peak of your schedule? A good, not great Canes team that's going to have downgraded at QB. It will have downgraded at quarterback because you're going from Cam Ward to Carson Beck. I have to imagine you're going to be able to put up a rather favorable record if that's as tough as your schedule gets. So whatever toll your own personnel changes take on you, I don't see that being a game changer, a deal breaker, kicking you out of the playoffs. No, I still see you floating in that conversation, floating around at least. You're listening to the College Tribe Podcast. It's been every week for the most part. Throughout this entire college football season, the college football season has come to an end. That means that the College Tribe Podcast is coming to an end as well. Thank you for joining me on this journey. I'm your host, Austin Price. It's been a pleasure. Just trying to keep reminding you of that, trying to voice my thankfulness as we press on here. Let's see. The seventh team I had listed, Clemson. Dabo, he's coming around to the transfer portal, and he's confirming that his grip on the ACC is still there. He proved that this season. With the transfer portal, it probably ain't going to relinquish without a fight. However, when looking at Clemson's schedule anyway, we see that they host some of their toughest conference opponents. SMU, Duke, Syracuse, Florida State. I know FSU struggled, but they're a rival that Clemson didn't really dominate like they should have this season. And, of course, after going 2-10, when you're Florida State, you're bound to be better this upcoming season. Your toughest game is at South Carolina. That's a team that you just went toe-to-toe with and you own in recent memory. So beyond that, it's a home game with, what, a decent LSU and a couple of trap games. You play no great teams. That's what I'm saying. SMU, Duke, Syracuse, decent teams. And that's by ACC standards. South Carolina, LSU, each finished with, what, 4 losses? Good teams. Not great. That is definitely manageable, especially for a Clemson program that might be on the rise. Number 8, I got BYU. The Cougars finished their season on about as strong of a note as they could ask for. And I see only 2 of what I will call objective threats on their 2025 planner. That's TCU and Iowa State, the former of which they host. And once again, those are good teams, not great teams. The rest of their uncertainty falls on trap games like Colorado, Texas Tech. Both of those teams are on the road. But when it comes to games like those, just like all the other ones I've referred to throughout this rundown, you are ultimately the only ones to blame for losing them. Because there's nothing at face value that indicates the opponents you're facing are somehow way better than you. That's why I'm calling them trap games. So if the Cougs don't fall into any traps, they should be a favorite to make and perhaps even win the Big 12. Number 9, Illinois. You heard me right. yes, I believe the Illinois Fighting Illini will be in the playoff conversation next season. They only lost 3 games this year. None of the teams that beat them are on next year's schedule. Also, quarterback Luke Altmyer is returning. Their toughest games are at Duke, 9-4, lost their QB. At Indiana, good, not great team, that's expected to drop in competitiveness some. And Ohio State. You host them at a difficult time in their schedule. You are wedged between Minnesota and a trip to Wisconsin. That has trap game written all over it. As for where these teams fall on your schedule, they each come after hideous competition. The trip to Duke comes after Western Illinois. The trip to Indiana comes after Western Michigan. And then you got Ohio State after Purdue. A team that you just beat, what, 66-0? They won one game. This team could very well be next season's Hoosiers. Great record, good team, fed on many of the week, going to upset a ton of SEC loyalists. Probably won't stay in the bracket for long, but you're just happy to be included. But if you think that's a hot take, let's get ready for this one. My 10th team, Virginia Tech. I know. They went 6-7 this year. But of their six regular season losses, only one was decided by more than 7 points, and it was against Clemson. They lost by 10. And they won't be facing the Tigers next year. Beyond that, it was extremely close defeats dealt by Vandy. The loss was in overtime. They host Vandy this upcoming season. They lost to Rutgers. They don't meet next year. They lost to Miami. We all remember that BS loss. And they now host the Canes with what will likely be a less explosive offense. Remember that. They host Syracuse. They lost that game in OT. They do not face in 2025. Duke, they lost only by 3 on the road. They also won't face off in 2025. So you avoid multiple teams here. And even the teams that you're avoiding, though, they were scared of you. You were going toe-to-toe with them. As for how good you looked in the games you actually won, you never beat a team by less than 15 points. Your toughest non-home games in 2025 are South Carolina. Once again, that's a good team. You meet them at a neutral site that it's like in Atlanta. I could be wrong. Neutral site game, season opener. You can definitely win that. You can stun the Gamecocks there. And then beyond that, you go to Georgia Tech, but they just went 7-6, and that was one of several teams that you convincingly beat this season. Maybe outside of that, home game against Louisville. Once again, good, not great ACC team. Those games are absolutely winnable. And that's all without even mentioning that starting quarterback Kyron Drones is returning. He's not great, but at least him coming back as your starting QB would keep your offense's identity solid. In short, I know many of us were fooled into believing their hype coming into 2024. I get that. But with all this stuff in mind, I think I'm ready to risk being fooled again. The Hokies have literally everything going their way. It's phenomenal. Number 11. I was a bit hesitant on this one, which is why they're listed so low. But yeah, I guess I'll slap Alabama in here too. Especially when considering how often people like to give the Tide the benefit of the doubt, and with how many of their games, while difficult, aren't monumental for the quality of talent they land on an annual basis. I don't feel the idea of them squeaking in is some unimaginable reach. Not only that, but all three of the regular season losses they're coming off of, Vandy, Tennessee, Oklahoma, those are now home games. And while we're on the subject, heck, even LSU's a home game. They do have a few unappealing road games, though. And sorry, Seminole fans, I'm not talking about Florida State. Instead, I'm talking about Georgia, Missouri, South Carolina, and let's throw Auburn in there, too. But hey, you beat all those guys this year, so what's the worry, really? No, in all seriousness, even if that success doesn't 100% carry over into next year, it probably won't be the end of the world. Because again, look at the benefit of the doubt people were trying to give Bama after some of the absolute embarrassments they suffered in 2024. Especially if you have some more quality wins, quote-unquote, over guys like Tennessee and LSU. That tells me you should be able to afford dips against a couple of those road foes, and definitely so if we're talking about like those Georgia, South Carolina ones. At least assuming they're as good as they were this year. Number 12, last and potentially least, I guess, depending on how you look at it, I have Memphis. The Tigers are my pick for the playoffs group of five representation. So obviously I'm going to have to bring them up here. They are a consistent program. They will be coming off of what, an 11-2 season, something like that? I think they went 2-0 against Power 4 opposition. Next year, they get to host Arkansas. That's an SEC team that's certainly beatable, but it'll nonetheless get you some clout on your strength of schedule. You also get to host Navy and Tulane. Those are two of the better teams that you face in AAC play. Not only that, the former of the two, Navy, beat you by 2 scores this season. So you hosting them is huge. And you get to avoid Army, the conference's defending champs. With all of that falling into place for them, the Group of Five spot is undoubtedly theirs to lose. So that's it. Those are my 12 teams to look out for. I know there are some people who could be like, where's Miami? Where's Tennessee? Or whatever. Look, I looked at teams like them. They've simply got too many landmines, some of which I literally touched on throughout this whole bit. All of these teams I covered have circumstances that I feel are fairly more comfortable than theirs, if not significantly so. So therefore, I've made my list and I'm sticking to it. My third and final segment here, I just kind of want to spend a bit more time on this, and that is just expressing thanks for having the ability to do this show this season, and everyone who tuned in. College football has been my first love in sports. It has been the driving force in what's wanted me to get into sports media. That is why I wanted to make a podcast all about college football. Covering this season, covering some of the biggest stories, especially being in the Florida Panhandle, you know, there's so many teams in our general vicinity that people root for. This is a military town, so we get a lot of folks from different paths of life that have come from different areas that root for different teams. It's a very diverse area when it comes to fan bases that way. So I just really wanted to try to channel that, try to capture that. Already looking ahead to next season. I wasn't joking when I said that earlier. I do look forward to it the minute the season ends. I'm looking ahead to August. So I want to thank you for joining me on this journey. And I hope to see you in August. I hope to get an opportunity to do this for a second season and keep this going. But whether or not I do, whether or not that is possible, whether or not that's where my life's going to be in several months, we'll have to see. I'm still new to the radio scene, still new to the podcasting scene. A lot of moving pieces, especially I'm 23. So especially at this point in my life, you know, there's a lot that can happen, a lot that can change, a lot of fluidity. Nonetheless, I did absolutely enjoy this. That much is for certain. And I do hope that I can do this again in the future. You have been listening to the College Try Podcast. All of these episodes are on the local podcast page at ESPNPensacola.com. You can listen to ESPN Pensacola on 99.1 FM, 1330 AM, or on your ESPN Pensacola mobile app. You can also, on that local podcast page, find Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass, War Eagle Weekly. That's a show I do regarding Auburn athletics with Bill Clark. Fantastic people. Do wonderful shows. Honored to work with them. And yeah, my name is Austin Price. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for coming along. Just wanted to say that one last time. And I hope to see you in August for the hype leading up to next college football season.